Hi, and welcome to Conversations in Clean from Amphora Solutions. I'm Catherine Daly, and with me is my co-host, Simon Coles. In this episode, we'll be talking with Andrea Cho in Virginia, the USA. Andrea is an enterprise agile coach at a cybersecurity firm. Andrea, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, Simon.
Hi.
And so let's begin with hearing a little bit about how you came across Clean.
Wow. So that must have been back in 2012 or earlier, possibly 2010. So about 7 to 9 years ago. But I was at an experiential week-long workshop with one of my mentors in the IT space, Jerry Weinberg, who ran these camps, week-long sort of retreats with a small number of people. It was no more than 40 or 50. From around the world, and amidst them were two agile coaches who had been exposed to Clean and gave me a taste of it, sort of back of the napkin style, after dinner. And then I thought, oh, that's interesting. The questions they asked me led me to think about how I learned at my best or what that was like for me. And I had come up with a little landscape and a few questions, and they even had me draw it. So I walked away from that with like this amazing new insight about myself.
Then what happened?
Then I went back to work and things consumed me again. I didn't really pick up a Clean book right away, but I did soon after. I think it was Judy's book. By 2014, I had enough confidence to sort of venture out and try to share the stuff. And I got a slot in, 45-minute slot or whatever it was at the Big Agile yearly conference. And that was my first time doing anything at a conference, let alone Clean. And it went quite well. And I was interviewed by a podcaster at that conference as well about Clean, which got published on InfoQ website. So that was back in 2014. And from there, I just started like acquiring all the books and started going to trainings and so forth. So I would say 2014 was kind of watershed because I think that was when Caitlin's book came out. That's when I knew that the group aspect of Clean or the business application of Clean would be where I would be most likely to put my energy. But I haven't done that completely exclusively of all the other types of things. I've been to Clean Space workshops, Clean interviewing workshops twice, and so on.
So what is it about Clean that makes, that causes it to be interesting and applicable in the Agile world? Or what is it about Agile that makes it interesting to Clean interesting?
There are quite a few Agile coaches who have really learned what coaching is as opposed to what Agile coaching is. So in the agile coaching space, there's more of an industrial quality to the coaching, which means organizations are hiring these coaches to come in and basically push a way of working, which is not very clean.
Okay.
And so the coaches that are most disillusioned with the agile coaching space have learned about Clean and have found it to be a more respectful way of engaging people in what's going on in the organization, what's going on with teams, what's going on with people. And I think they just generally become more effective in their coaching. That said, it's still very nascent as a movement or as an application of Clean in the agile coaching space. There's no separate thing called Clean Agile Coaching, really, yet.
So I've heard of coaching as in you've got a life coach or someone like that or a business coach, and it's a one-on-one interaction where you sort of sit down in a room and discuss all your problems and come up with solutions. Is Agile coaching just that done in an Agile environment, or is there something else going on?
It's more about how we develop software and how we collaborate in teams, how we draw in the work from customers all the way to how we deliver it out the other side. So it's about software development and ideation, decision making. There's all kinds of things that go into developing software.
If I was employed as an agile coach, what would I be doing on my average day? And how does Clean fit into that?
There is working with the people who set the direction. There's working, so that means the product managers, the people who interview end users or people out in the field. There's working with engineering managers who form the teams, helping them think about the structure of teams, the communication in their teams, maybe mentoring them on coaching, doing their one-on-one coaching with their team members, their reports. It could, depending on your technical savvy, also involve working with teams to collaboratively code together, for example.
But does every agile software team have an agile coach, or is it just someone in trouble, or how does it? Again, it's a mysterious world to me. It's, you know, is it a necessary function? Is it something high-performing teams have, something low-performing teams need to get better?
So it's a bit of a mix of everything that you've mentioned. Not every organization employs agile coaches. When they do, they tend to hire many, invest like a lot of money into the coaching practice. So there's usually an agile center of excellence or something. So I have worked in those environments and I don't find them to be effective. So what happens is the center will send the coaches out to the teams where the teams don't necessarily want the coaching.
Oh.
And that is not effective. So we don't do that. And what I love about this workplace is that we invite pull-based coaching. So a team, we advertise what we do and what we can do for a team, and they have to come find us. They have to come request us. So that's a really nice switch, and it's a more clean way of interacting with the teams.
And so all the skills that we might put under the sort of the Clean umbrella, and particularly the systemic modeling umbrella, are you using those skills yourself every day, are you trying to infuse them into the team as well?
When I get a chance to do a little bit of sort of systemic work with teams, I do, but it's so far quite rare. Mm-hmm. That said, I do bring the systemic modeling mindset and the tools that I have into my everyday. So whether it's visible or not, it's always there. And some of the people have started to get to know me as the conflict coach because I gravitate towards where I hear the conflict and I get curious. And then people ask me or tell me what's going on, and I offer that I can help them in those situations. So I've been called upon several times for that sort of thing.
And with you mentioned systemic modeling mindset, so you're not necessarily using the tools directly, but you're bringing your mindset. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I suppose I do use the tools in a way because, for example, I was sitting in a meeting with 5 or 6 managers and I was asking them about the system they were building, and they told me a few things, and then I asked them for a metaphor specifically. I said, so if you could describe this part of the system and that part of the system, what would they be like? And I got amazing metaphors. I didn't have to open my mouth once again, and there just was immediate clarity about the differences between the two parts of the system. So that's one example. I've done that a number of times and it's been quite effective. I listen for metaphors and then take them in and play them back. They're part of how I listen, I guess.
You strike me as, and it happens to lots of us, it's like once you've done the trainings and had the experience, it doesn't leave you and you use it all the time, but not necessarily overtly. So it's only when someone comes knocking the door and going, how did you do that? Systemic modeling is a useful set of skills, even if you can't get everybody else to do it, which I think is something we miss a little bit because we all think that we want to go and do systemic modeling engagements and revolutionize how a 10-person team works together or something like that. But you could just be a better whatever your normal job is.
Yeah, when I do bring them in, it's very lightly. So in that same meeting with the metaphors, we had a senior director there and then some other managers underneath him. And the concept of time and urgency came up. And so I just had them do maybe 30 seconds worth of where is tomorrow, like physically having them physically point to tomorrow versus a year from now. And the senior director's year from now is right here.
Wow.
But it wasn't for the other managers. So it just became something that they could hook onto to sort of have empathy for each other's stance.
And is there anywhere else in your work as an agile coach at the moment that Clean's coming in, impacting?
Yes. With our small group of coaches that we have, three of us really, I introduce Clean to them and they brought me in basically because I have a certain mindset and way of working and they want to avail themselves also of what I know. And what's really neat is I was in Boston a couple weeks ago and my boss was able to meet Caitlin. And so there's a little synergy, they're connected now. And down the road, as we're developing the agile coaching community in the US, which is largely within the systemic modeling side of that, there's quite a bit of synergy. So most of the people who came to Boston's training were agile coaches.
You're doing the systemic modeling trainings over in Boston. I think this is the second year it's run, is it?
Yes. This was the third instance of having Caitlin come over.
I'm curious. I've always felt that anywhere you've got brains working together, the clean stuff is going to be useful. Particularly in technology where, or in software, because we can have to the death fights about something as trivial as what editor to use. So you would think that they would be screaming for systemic modeling, especially. Why are they not literally queuing at the door? What's missing here?
Yeah, I think the advocacy part is difficult. How do you explain it? Right? How do you explain it without using the word systemic modeling? I think Jackie Surin just posted somewhere on Facebook about the idea that she's not selling Clean when she's going out to her NGOs. She's selling outcome-based orientation she's selling outcomes. What does the customer want? And so until folks can come to me and actually state what they want, that I won't know if I can go in and offer them anything. So I can guess what they need, but I can't tell them what they need. That would be somewhat unclean. So it's a very hard thing to, even in my position, to sell. I tend to write up little blog posts or share links that might help them start to think that I have something to offer, right? But I don't push it on people. I can't do that.
I like that conflict coach. That's as catchy as drama-free, really. We were talking with Caitlin in the last episode, and she was saying, if you get any drama in a system, that's valuable. And the secret to the solution is in that drama. And I think organizations have conflict because there's something important going on in one way or another. But we lack the tools to, well, until we had systemic modeling, we sort of lack the tools to dive in there and go, let's treat this as a positive experience. What can we do? What can we understand?
I've just come up with this term called potholes. Mm-hmm. I think somebody at work actually mentioned potholes in terms of the way we communicate. And potholes are all the places where we're making assumptions about the software or about each other that cause us to actually deflate and not go faster, which is what the agile movement is all about, is producing better software faster.
So systemic modeling is interesting, but one of the things that's always, and that's the thing we met, you know, we met through systemic modeling, but you're into a whole bunch of other stuff. And I find that really interesting as well. And in fact, every time a concept in systemic comes up, you can map it to something else. I'd like to talk about some of those if I can.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. I'm curious what those are.
So one of the things is the core protocols.
Yes.
What is the core protocols and what's the relationship between that and Clean, do you think?
Wow. Yeah, I had this vision back in 2014 or 15 that all these really cool sets of tools would kind of become cousins or get to know each other. So the relationship is still tenuous, but the people that I know that are most effective at their coaching take bits and pieces from both areas. Core protocols is a set of protocols that came out of two people who used to work at Microsoft, and they developed the Visual C++ tooling at Microsoft, I believe, and had a really high-performing team. So they quit Microsoft and decided to go off and run what they called boot camps, which were 1-week-long labs in which they invited people in to use what they had initially written down as a set of protocols that they had observed on those high-performing teams, to use those protocols to make something really great as a team in a week. And over 20 years of doing these labs, each time it was kind of a recursive thing. The teams that came in would use the protocols as they were, and then by the end of the week, not only would have something great, in most cases, to show off, mm-hmm. but would also have improved the protocols if they had found any ways to improve them. So over 20 years, it got improved quite a bit. So I guess you might want an example of what a protocol might be.
What, the check-in protocol or whatever?
Yes, the check-in protocol is about disclosure and in a way that makes it psychologically safe. So you can check into your team at any time or before a meeting or to a team member or to anybody you're with whenever you want. It's not mandatory if you're in a group to check in. If you don't want to, you can just say, I pass. But the way it works is you say, I feel glad something. You say what you're glad about. You say, I feel mad. If you feel mad about anything, you have two others, which are sad and afraid. And so at the end of your disclosure, you say, I'm in. And everybody else says, welcome. That's the only thing that they can respond to as far as the content of your check-in. So if you think of the professional workplace as in most places, a location where you put your emotions at the door, you come in and you're a professional. This is completely broken away, or like it's dissolved by having this protocol where you can take what's ever weighing on you or elevating you and share it with your team so they know the operating system of this person in that moment. So it's a really cool way to create connections. And when I see teams that don't do this, I really wonder, how do they connect with each other? How do they know what's going on?
We've been really interested in how you might use, or what the boundaries are about using clean, especially in the workplace and other informal environments, and where, you know, we've got some informal rules about what you should and shouldn't do, but just listening to that process, that's quite a vulnerable. Do you have to do something special to make it safe for that to happen in a team? Or could I just do that in my team tomorrow and everything will be, I mean, surely people would get persecuted or you know, there'll be revenge or something like that.
There are ways that it can be abused, right? And you have to learn a little bit about it. So you can't check in and say, I'm mad you did X to me, right? You wouldn't do that. And it wouldn't be from a clean perspective. That would be a judgmental thing. So it's personal. It's more about yourself and your own state than it is about your interactions with other people. But it could be about your product. So I'm checking in. I'm mad our software has got increasing number of bugs. I'm glad I want to do something about it. And I'm in. That could be my check-in. Might not have anything very personal about it. Could be about work. But it could be I blew a tire on the way to work and I was late and I'm in. And then people know why I'm late to work. And if I'm a little testy, they know why. But going back to your question about what should be the safety protocol, I think the clean community does need to disclose or come up with a set of principles and guidelines. It's very clear in the core protocols how safety is maintained. First of all, you don't just use one tool or teach somebody one tool without telling them that it is really a set of protocols that work in conjunction with each other. So they don't have to learn all of them in order to get started with one. I guess from the historical perspective and from what has worked in the past, it would be wrong to introduce one protocol and leave the people learning that protocol without any awareness that there are a set that work in tandem. And I think with systemic modeling, it's a little bit like that. I mean, we have people going out there and teaching clean feedback, which is probably one protocol that works fairly well independently. And yet, when you really learn the systemic modeling stuff, it works in tandem with clean setup or intention setting and little experiments. And so that's really interesting. At what level should we be introducing things to folks?
Yeah, because there's a temptation to give somebody an experience or, you know, I've got 45 minutes, let me teach them a little bit of clean.
I've done that myself.
Yeah, we've done it too. And I think the thing that we found ourselves having to do is sort of like, you know, here's a clean question. You can ask this. Or we did clean space with three spaces as a taster one day and things like that. But I think, you know, you have to kind of say, and then only use this in this context. You know, like, so don't ask more than two clean questions in a row until you've learned something else. You know, when you get some more clean experience, you might be safer to break that rule. But for now, no more than two in a row and things like that. And that's our way of trying to give them an experience and get them excited, help them be safe. But even then, they still go home and they'll still ask as many clean questions as they want of their partner. I mean, I don't know how to balance that. I've given you an exciting experience versus, and now you're enthusiastic versus how to treat the tool with respect.
Yeah. As Caitlin said in an earlier podcast, it's something to the effect of clean is like a sharp knife. Yeah. It'll work really, really well, but you just have to be really intentional about where you're using it.
So how do things like the core protocols, do they have a similar safety culture at all? I mean, when you...
Everything about the core protocols is about having safety in a team. So there's the pass protocol. So you can always pass. There's a check-in and you can check out. So if I'm in drama at any time and I'm not able to communicate coherently, I just tell the team I'm checking out. You go away. You don't have to give a reason. It just means you're not fully in. You're not fully focused on the work and you can't be present for the team. So you check out. That's a safety valve. There's an intention check protocol. So whenever you think that somebody, you don't understand what somebody just said, you can state that you'd like to do an intention check, which is really just being curious about what the other person has just said. So that's a little bit like, that's where I would use clean questions. So when I've been in boot camp and known about clean and had somebody use an intention check, I was like, let's stop, because they weren't being really super clean about it. So that's where I think there could be more synergy between these types of things.
And is there anywhere else outside of Agile that clean is permeating your world?
Well, interestingly, I guess I could use this as an example. The DC area has a very, very tiny clean presence, and it's really just like a seed underneath the soil, and it's still pretty far down. But this morning, I'll be going out to brunch with four other people who don't know each other yet and who are coming together. They are each in the coaching or therapy arena. One is a social justice NVC type person who's been to a number of clean workshops. Yeah, I try to keep the community here growing in the US in general, and that has spanned outside of systemic modeling, of course.
One of the things I remember you had a good look at was the sort of conversational intelligence thing. I just picked the book up because we're trying to do some videos as well. And one of the things we've hit is how to explain the triune brain in like 2 minutes in a way that's powerful and useful. And I just happened to pick this book up. Our five brains, the reptilian brain, the limbic brain, and the neocortex. And then the heart brain and the prefrontal cortex. There's all the same model. So I guess you had some interaction with the conversational intelligence thing. What did that look like from a clean perspective? Everything has similar ideas, isn't it, in some ways?
Yeah. There's other communities that are obviously doing things that are similar to some of the things in systemic. Like I see the Cartman drama triangle all over the place. conversational intelligence. So I joined that community briefly. Judith Glaser was still alive. I wasn't aware that she had been sick, and listened to a number of the webinars that she gave. And I guess what I felt attracted to was that she had put into a few one pagers, some visual tools that could help especially managers understand how their communication style could affect somebody else's hormone levels. Like, she spoke in science terms. And I think because she did that, a lot of people really were attracted to her work. She worked with researchers who could prove that when you talk over people, cortisol levels get raised and people shut down. And when you listen to people, that settles them and some other hormone kicks into place. So by having that and being able to explain to senior level managers in scientific terms with a visual that sort of is like a dashboard, which managers like to look at, you know, they do, you know, she was able to sort of reach an audience that is really critical. So I've not yet incorporated any of her stuff. I never finished the program, but what the Agile coach that we just hired has gone through her program in its entirety. So hopefully we'll be able to marry those two things up a little bit.
The big Agile conference in August, anything around that?
Yeah, so that was interesting. Caitlin and I got invited to do two 75-minute sessions. I think it's quite a bit longer than anything we've had in the past. And whoever comes to the first session stays for the second. There's just a break in between. So we'll have 40 people in a room in which we will be inviting conflict themes with the idea of helping the Agile community become more robust and anti-fragile. So meaning we have to be able to take on controversial issues, unpack them, and discuss them in a way that doesn't shut other people down. So this is sort of the next level of being useful to the Agile community using Caitlin's models. So that's in August. I'm really looking forward to that.
So Andrea, thanks so much for spending a bit of time with us, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
I really appreciate the time. I hope it was useful for your audience, and let's see what happens.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. So thanks very much. Bye.